The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2014 Annual Conference, copyright 2014. If you have purchased this recording, you are free to make multiple copies for your school's use. You may not sell copies of the audio or post copies on the Internet. Order additional conference recordings from this year's conference or previous conferences at store.accsedu.org. Find out more about the Association of Classical and Christian Schools at www.accsedu.org. Thank you.
Well, we're going to go ahead and get started for this next session. It's going to be a panel discussion on strategic planning. So if you'll go ahead and take a seat. There should be index cards that are now on your tables. Those will play a very important role in this panel discussion. You can go ahead and even begin now. If you've got questions before I introduce our panel members that you will have for the panel, love to have you actually write those down. That will be the way that the panel receives your questions, is on written note cards. So go ahead and take a moment as you're sitting there, if you can think of things related to strategic planning that you would like to present to our panelists. Well, my name is Davies Owens. I am with the Ambrose School out in Boise, Idaho. I am served both as the head of vision and advancement as well as the dean of the upper schools. I'm starting my third year this fall. Prior to that, I was in Atlanta, Georgia, as head of the Heritage Preparatory School, another ACCS member school. And like many of you, we all know that strategic planning is critical and essential, and we all wax eloquently about it, but probably like most of us, the strategic plans may be bound up in a notebook somewhere that may not see a lot of light of day, or maybe they do. But the goal in this time is to give us an opportunity to hear from these three, and let me go ahead and introduce them. First of all, David Goodwin, who's a colleague of mine out at the Ambrose School. David has going on a decade now at the Ambrose School, has spent time prior to that with Hewlett-Packard, so has a good business mind that he brings to bear, which I'm grateful for out at Ambrose for sure. Rod Gilbert. Rod is at the Regent School in Austin. We're glad he's here. Going on 11 years now, and I guess 7 years as head of school, and prior to that at Trinity in Durham, in Raleigh-Durham area. So, again, life experience there with a lot around strategic planning. If you were just in Greg Gianforte's session, as many of us were, you know that he brings an amazing amount of business wisdom and experience. He's, I think, in his fifth startup software company. He has been chairman of the Petra School in Bozeman, Montana now for over a decade, and has really seen that school grow through all of its various stages. And so we have a lot of shared wisdom around this panel. So again, I'm going to go ahead and get things started with a couple questions for these guys. And then if you have a question, if I could get, actually it'd be a big help, if somebody would be willing to kind of be my runner as note cards of questions are formulated, if you could hand them kind of usher style. Would somebody be willing just to kind of float here in the middle aisle a bit and grab those cards? Thank you. That would be great. As is, index cards are written, just hand them, pass them to the center aisle, and our usher will bring them forward. So, well, let's get started. I guess the first question, before we jump fully into questions, I'm going to give each of these guys just a moment to share just kind of an initial statement, some thoughts on the topic of strategic planning. Dave, you want to start us out? Or Greg?
Well, I've already unloaded my dump truck.
It's all the way on.
Make him figure out the thing.
So strategic planning is really about filling up the classrooms. I'm a big guy that believes tactics define strategy, and ultimately success of a school is based on having great things happening in classrooms and word of mouth in the community. That's what we've experienced in Bozeman. So it's a matter of having a vision differentiated and communicated clearly, that is compelling, and then filling up the classrooms.
One of the things that we learned in our strategic
process of letting parents talk through what they dream about the school is actually more important than the final product in the notebook. Giving parents a chance to talk about what's on their heart and then letting that infuse into the board's vision and into my vision's head is a major key in our success. So not just telling them what ought to happen, but listening to them a lot.
From the time that I started strategic planning work in the 90s, one of the frustrations I had with it was that it often results in a lot of hours of meetings and not a lot of action. And so that frustration is one I'm sure some of you may encounter, especially if you spend a lot of time talking about the mission, vision, sorts of things in strategic planning. Greg last hour talked about coming up with a 5-year financial plan. I think that's where the goal needs to land for most strategic plans. If you know where you're going, it's easier to, you do need to have the vision conversations, but they need to be headed towards a forecast. For example, in our school, I'm not sure, I agree with Greg that generally filling classrooms is a good goal. It's a financial goal. It's a mission goal. But for us, one of the big questions we had to come to is what's the right size of a school to serve the mission of the school and its cultural impact in the community. And so some of those decisions need to flow into your strategic plan, and then that flows through to your building plans and everything else. So that's what I'd say.
Okay.
If I could just add one last thing, and this may or may not apply, but in a business context, whenever someone says, this is strategic, we need to do it. For me, that's really a euphemism for losing money. So I think strategy is important, but sometimes the strategy dog can wag the execution. Strategy tail can wag the execution dog.
Well said. I got louder. As you are filling these out, if you have a specific panelist that you want to direct a question to, if you want to write their name on there, that would be helpful. Otherwise, I'll just kind of put it out here. So the first question that's made its way front is, how much of a strategic plan is the responsibility of the board, and how much of it is the responsibility of the headmaster? Anyone want to tackle that?
I see myself as the primary architect of the strategic plan. So like I said, from 2008 to 2011, it was a slow process, and we gathered 6 teachers, 6 parents, and gave them sort of subgroup assignments like you've seen other models. But for a year, I literally carried around a little notebook of paper, and I would go out to coffee with a parent, and I would show them, here's some things we're thinking about doing, and here's a dream we have. Could you help me come up with some more clarity to that? And they could then watch me scribble down what they're saying, and okay, that's something that we can consider. And then I would go back to the board on a monthly basis and then literally just pull out my notes and just say, here's some things that I'm hearing from some key parents. And it scared the board sometimes because they would say, well, are you asking the right families? or make sure they're on our side. Kind of behavior, kind of a us-them thing sometimes. It was a little scary for some of the founding board members to release that to a more organic, iterative process. But at the end of it, I found myself to be the chief architect. But they weren't all my ideas. I was the one that had to find a harmonizing behavior in the community that fit the school, so that when it did get released publicly, it really wasn't Rod's vision, it was a whole lot of people's vision that had a common voice.
That makes sense, yeah. So let me, let's you and I add to that. Or?
Well, I was just going to say, I strongly believe that the head of school has to do the strategic plan, mainly because no one knows the school like the head of school does. Boards just don't have that level of visibility. But then once you got to go in with the plan already written to a degree, because otherwise the board will spend forever on it. But the flip side of that coin is you have to go in with an open hand and be willing to let go parts of your baby. And so that's a tough thing to do, but that's our call.
Yeah, I would agree that I think that, the headmaster is full-time, working in the school. The board members are all volunteer. They have day jobs. They just don't have the bandwidth to put a strategic. They can provide feedback. They can react. But a straw man has to be put up. And that really is the headmaster or headmistress that has to do that.
So this kind of leads into, follows off of what you're talking about. So kind of two-part. First question is, really, how do you define a strategic plan? Some schools use the board to originate the plan, but in contrast, there seems to be value in having focus groups and surveys with parents and students and faculty to actually build up the plan. Is there a better way to go about that? Rod, you're talking about even kind of your own observations and creation as you go. So how does all of that pull together?
Yeah, we honestly didn't do some kind of broad democratic, broad brushstrokes. Everybody, what do you want? Because at some point that looks like a non-visionary wind checker. We were more selective at asking people that could at least think strategically and get them to think in these 5 and 10 year behaviors. Does that? So we didn't do a whole bunch of surveys on that.
Is there, kind of related to the timeline question, is there an optimal timeline? I've seen, I know the school I was at, we kind of thought 5 year, but 5 year was like, you can't even imagine 5 months for most of us, much less 5 years.
Y'all are all welcome to go look at ours on our school website. I think it's dated 2009, so it's a five-year-old thing. But if you look at the last couple of pages, we only promise what's going to happen 1 year out, and then we promise what might happen 2 years out. And then after that, it's like a very vague impressionist painting. Sort of, we're still there. And then what we do is we put a lot of energy into what we call our annual operational plan. So that's a very articulate piece about really tactical goals for that year. Mm-hmm. And then we don't feel beholden to some five-year projection. I don't know what I'm going to have for dinner tonight.
Right.
So how would I know if we're going to add a lacrosse team in 2019?
Right.
So why put it on a chart and fake a promise? So we've just accepted the fact that we're learning and responding and going with vision, and then we get extremely articulate and make sure that our annual operational plan has a firm financial strategic backing as well that doesn't do violence to that document from 2009.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say our approach is similar. What we know 10 years from now is that we're going to be a classical Christian school. We're going to be raising up young people to think critically so they know what they believe and why and can express it persuasively. That's what we camp on. And then we build annual plans that are really incremental, based on what we're learning. Because we don't know what we don't know. To Douglas's, Wilson's comments this morning, we just take the next step and hold the thing in a life grip, not a death grip, about how it's going to happen. We have some other themes that we would like to have. Music more integrated into our secondary, so we look out for opportunities to do that, but we don't have a specific thing we're doing. We try and look for things year to year and make those commitments on an annual basis.
One thing, to the point of Rod mentioning publishing the strategic plan, we don't publish ours. One of the problems with published documents is the board tends to sugarcoat things or try not to put anything difficult in there. So what we publish, we have goals for graduate and admission, and those are public and don't change. They have been the same for 10 years or so. We have objectives that are published out of the plan, mostly emphasized to our staff every year in a staff letter that we send out and things like that. But parents, we wouldn't withhold those from them, the objectives. The rest of it, I'm sure that we don't need any help telling people what our weaknesses are, so we keep all that internally and then we can be unjaded with it.
But behind the scenes for you guys, are there formal annual at least opportunities to come in and say, are we advancing on this particular strategic plan? When does that happen?
Right. Yeah, I'm sorry. We roll ours every year. We have a board retreat. Our retreats, somehow I've got to learn Greg's secret to keeping a retreat to 3 hours. Ours are 3 days, but they're only once a year. And the board retreat is where it's the centerpiece of the board retreat for us every year. We go back in and reevaluate and advance it forward a year. We let it go 2 years before we re-advance it, because otherwise, or to change the five-year plan, we let it roll for 2 years, but every year we revisit it.
So we do a half-day board retreat, head and board retreat in February, and in that meeting I bring an early draft of the operational plan for the coming year. And that's already based on many other conversations, so there's no surprise in that. And then at the July board meeting, it's coming up in about 3 weeks. It's sort of a stamp of approval that this is what we're going to go get done this year. In the February one and a little bit in the July one, we spend half a day just on the much larger questions, like socioeconomic things going on in the city, new private schools in the area that we can support or would be an adjustment to our enrollment. Long-term vision conversation as well, but those are set aside for two times a year.
Yeah, we do something for ourselves. I explained it earlier. The headmaster prepares a draft budget for the following year that includes specific initiatives that may or may not. Some of those things are on the bubble until we figure out what enrollment is, but again, we do it on an annual basis.
So this question is about getting started. It seems overwhelming. Can we borrow a similar mission or vision statement until we have continued to grow enough to refine it, kind of the 300 grit sandpaper, kind of work at it as we go, borrow something initially? What do you think?
There's nothing new under the sun.
R&D, research and duplicate, right?
Yeah. A bunch of pirates, we just steal stuff and rename it. We call it regentizing. I mean, the operational plan template that I use is a blend of four different plans that I've picked up at software companies in Austin. So, yeah.
Okay. Agreed.
I'm going to take his stuff.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So you guys are all going to share yours afterwards for everyone. So. Question for Rod, just define key parent. Use that term.
The rich ones.
Okay. Thank you.
Of course not. Of course not. That would be ludicrous. I just wanted to make sure it was awake. The answer to the question are influencers, cultural influencers. So not necessarily the person that's just dogging me in the parking lot because they don't like the coach. Okay, they're influencing, but I'm having to manage them in their sort of ire and angst, but they're not necessarily a healthy influencer about the culture of the school. So out of 500, we have 580 families, I could probably narrow it down to maybe 80 families that are key influencers who, when the going gets tough, they want to get in there and fix it. They want to be problem solvers. They want to own a situation and be a part of it and not just do the parking lot talk, which is fine, but I mean they want to help be solution finders. And if you look at the strategic plan that we have on the website, I knew I'd found an influencer that I had never I had never considered this particular mom before as a key influencer. But after we released the strategic plan, like a year later, she came and brought it to me and just wanted to have coffee, and she had dog-eared that thing and played with it, and then in the margins of it, she said, well, Rod, if you really want this to be done, maybe you could try. And she had all her little marginal notes. And I thought, this woman is going to change the school. So I just sort of harnessed her passion and without putting her on any committee or anything. But she was influencing the mommies all around her in a much more profound way than I or any board member or any finance committee.
This question, is there a strategic planning expert that is worth spending a lot of money on for their consultation? And maybe a
David Godwin, right? Okay.
And maybe related to that would be, I know you guys have talked about board retreats. Is there value, especially as you're trying to get the strategic plan up and running and bringing in at least a neutral person from the outside to come in? So maybe answer both the hiring the expert professional versus and or having someone come in and help moderate?
Well, I was going to comment on the last question.
Go ahead.
I don't know about experts. on the key parent thing, I don't know. We take a little bit, I don't know. It reminds me a bit of the I have my family down here, of course. So Orlando, you got to do that. And every day we left Universal Studios for the last couple of days, everyone in the car had an opinion on how to get back to the hotel. Siri was the only one who really knew. What I would say with regard to strategic planning is I think strategic planning, maybe I don't take quite as much input from parents. What parents are there for is to keep us on the road. If we're doing things that are alienating parents, then we've got a problem. We need to listen to them. But for the most part, they don't understand classical education as well as we do. And so the goal is to get them to understand where we're going rather than to try and in our strategic plan. So if you look at our goals for graduate, for example, I would have a lot of parents who would like college admission or getting into good colleges or financial aid to be in that list. It's not. And it's not because we don't believe as a board that that's what education is about. So if you look at our goals for graduate, you won't find that.
On the consulting thing, when we started that strategic plan several years ago, I brought in a consultant that works with private schools and not-for-profits. And the one goal over a three-day period was to get the board to narrow down to the shortest list possible of important words. It's like, what are the important words? So it was football or Harkness tables or only Christian teachers or Shirley grammar or whatever, you know, it's sort of the vision things, but also just those little practices, you know, like if I take away mammal day from first grade, that's mission drift. And you know, I'm getting a U-Haul out of my, you know, I think I can take away football faster than the mammal day. But what we were doing with that, the consultant could come in neutrally, and he kept pounding them, saying, look, you founding board members, you new board members, y'all have to have those short lists or one of the key things so that as Rod goes out and socializes this larger strategic plan, he needs to know where the landmines are. He doesn't want to come back in 4 months and no mammal day, and then you're all angry because, you know. So getting them to just narrow that list down for me, then I knew if I protected those little quirky things, everything else is up for grabs. Back to what Wilson said earlier. And that scared them a little bit. It worked.
Yeah, I would say we brought in external people to help facilitate. I don't think we ever brought anybody in to do from my earlier comments, you know, I'm not a big fan of strategic plans. But we did have, we have had outside facilitators come in. We've generally been able to do that for a nominal fee and covering travel expenses. I would find another classical Christian school in your area. The advantage a facilitator has is that they can see the forest for the trees. Mm-hmm. You're too close to the problem. So I would suggest you find a headmaster at a nearby ACCS school and ask them to come facilitate your offsite, and maybe you can go do theirs. Mm. I mean, so iron sharpens iron, and you'll get... I don't think there's any silver bullet or secret sauce or anything like that. It's it's really being able to be objective enough to ask the hard questions, and positioning is hard because doing messaging and positioning is more about saying no to things than, because it's easy to say yes. If you end up with a laundry list that's got everything on it, you're not anything to anybody. Mm-hmm. It's about refining it. Just to David's comments, you have to decide who you're going to be consistent with your mission and then express that. Mm-hmm. And then I always like the challenge of, I don't like plans that are more than one page. Mm. It's really hard. But yeah, I think it was Mark Twain that said, I'm sorry this letter to you is so long, I didn't have enough time to write a short one. And I think it's the challenge to just do that.
Mm-hmm. That's good. So getting thin on my question stack, so if there are more of them out there, again, if you want to direct a question at one of the panelists specifically, if you'll just write their name on there and let me know your question. So the one I've got in hand is, says, besides word of mouth, what marketing vehicles have proven successful? So a little broader than just the strategic plan, but what marketing vehicles?
Word of mouth is the best one. I mean, if you have great things going on in the classroom, people will learn about it. We've tried to find every way to involve people in the community in our events. I mentioned earlier inviting community members to our thesis defenses. It's been phenomenal. We had a student. I think it was my son did his on why Christians should be involved in the state legislature. And we invited all the local legislators to come. And they were very interested in the topic. And one of them came up to me afterwards. He says, I had no idea what was going on here. I was very impressed. I don't know if I agree with everything that young man said, but how do I enroll my grandchildren? So it's just exposed. I mean, what you have going on in your classrooms is so precious. And you just need to tell a story. And by getting people involved, that's the thing we've found to be most effective.
Word of mouth. Good teachers. People talk about it at all their sporting events and church activities. Second thing is make your website as relational as possible and not about the content of the classical education. And David's really good at this stuff.
Yeah, websites clearly are a whole new tool because they are the one universal landing point. When I was trained in marketing 25 years ago, the idea was how do you get your whole message through? Well, you've got the ultimate platform in your website, so invest in it because that's the weird thing about schools is people come looking for you. They know they need the solution. They don't know what it looks like, but they'll come looking for you. Focus on that. There's some great services available. With regard to, you know, for our size school, we have three different size schools here, which is, you know, it's pretty good for a panel, I think. 1,500. So we're kind of across the spectrum. And one thing we found in the last year, for our size anyways, is that, and I think it was true even when we were 300 students, marketing is oftentimes a long-term investment. It's not something that happens overnight. And that doesn't mean you have to run ads on a local radio station for 5 years in a row. What it means is you have to be involved in your community and places where people identify you with something. And so we, for example, I know years ago, Geneva School of Bernie did a presentation on a benefit thing that they did that got the community to see what their school was about. We do an annual Christmas program. One of the things about Christmas is that it's the one time of year when traditional things are popular. Classical, traditional kids singing is a great thing. And so if you go to our website, you can see our annual broadcast that's out there. So there's all kinds of things you can do, but you've just got to make a name in your community. When people ask our mayor, who is the Ambrose School, I want her to have an answer. Oh, they're the ones who do that Christmas program, or they're the ones who teach Latin, or whatever it is.
Okay. All right, so Greg, what is the biggest mistake you've made in strategic planning?
We've made plenty of mistakes. Just thinking about it, you know, early on, I mean, I guess it took us a while to realize, and this sounds obvious in hindsight, that the most important thing is what's going on in the classroom. To have great things going on in the classroom, you got to have great teachers. We weren't paying our teachers enough. And as a result, some of the teachers weren't as good as they could have been. And we weren't always as aggressive as we should have been in upgrading some of the staff. That problem has fixed itself over time because there's enough disgruntlement amongst parents and things. And if you have teachers like this in your school, you know who they are. And I would just, in a gracious way, you know, God's created every single individual to contribute in some significant way, you know, somehow. But not everybody's destined to be in a classroom. And sometimes you have to help move along.
That's good.
Our
Yeah, go if you want to add to that.
Mistake, so
Yeah.
The one big one is that we were so dreamy in writing some of the documents that I did not involve the competent finance committee parents in that early process. So it's almost like I ran that thing out there, and then I had to figure out the financial implications along the way. And we recovered from that, but that was a couple of years of a sort of hard recovery that we have to make sure that we really are planning out what does this thing really cost.
I would say the biggest mistake, and this goes to my original comment about sort of the inane process of strategic planning that goes on forever and doesn't end up anywhere. And this is a very classical concept of antithesis. Your strategic plan, early on some of our strategic plans were more dreamy. They didn't have an antithesis to them. In other words, if we're going to invest here, what aren't we going to invest in? If we're going to be this, what aren't we going to be? And the what aren't we going to be can't be we're not going to be like the government schools, right? Because that's a little too easy. It has to be something you don't want to give up. If we're going to invest in drama, we are going to have to limit our sports programs. You know, those sorts of decisions need to be in the strategic plan, because it's not until you get to that antithesis point that they start becoming effective.
So, David, this is kind of related to what you, an earlier question, your earlier comment you made about in preparing a strategic plan, balancing both what the school believes to be important and the input of the parent. And so the comment was, or the question was, if our families really understood what we're up to, they would all leave. We tell them, but they really don't understand. We do want their input, and we want them to feel balanced, but we want them to feel valued, but at the same time, who's really driving the strategic plan? So how do you solicit their input, but at the same time, stay true to what you know is actually the direction the school needs to head into?
Yeah, I think my earlier comments mean who's driving the bus. You don't want to ignore them, because you'll have people jumping out the windows. But on the other hand, if it becomes a democracy, you're going to end up nowhere. So you've got to figure out how to do the big things. There are things in my categories at our school. I shouldn't name them, because somehow these will get back to our school. So I'm not going to name them. But there are things I do because parents need them or want them. There are things that I spend resources on that no one knows. For example, one of the things we spend money on and effort on is conversational Latin. It's kind of an odd way of teaching Latin, but our school is convinced that it's the absolute right way to do it, and so we invest in that. I don't think a parent at our school knows or cares about conversational Latin. There are some sports programs I won't name that are there because the parents have demanded them, and I'll pass it on.
All right. Let me, we've now got a handful of questions in about 10 minutes, so let me just move us on. So how do you determine maximum class size and school size? Anybody want to tackle that one?
Our policy is not to exceed 80 per grade in grades 3 through 12. And that's going to come under attack in the next few years for us, because we are the city is growing so fast that we now have 60 children on wait lists.
Wow.
And so I'm now getting pressure from families that even though they wanted small student-teacher ratios, they want their friends to be in there too.
You said 80 per grade?
80 children per grade.
And how many classrooms?
Five. So have a 1 to 16 teacher-student ratio.
Hmm.
And we have 1 to 12 in kindergarten because there were 12 disciples. The kindergarten teachers are convinced the research shows a 1 to 12 ratio, but I can't find any research that proves that. I think that's going to come under scrutiny in the next few years at our school.
Okay. Greg?
Yeah, we limit class sizes to 16 as well. We've camped on that. I have some regret about it being so low. Some of the studies I've seen, I'm not sure it matters, 16, 18, 20. We had waiting lists in all of our lower grades last year. We did make the decision this coming fall to add a second section in K4, K, and 1, and we'll let that progress up through grammar. Um, uh, but that's where we are.
Okay. So, David, here's a specific one for you. Can you give us some bullet points on what might be included in your non-published strategic plan and what is included?
Well, please turn off the recording. You know, Greg mentioned earlier, it's the Stapleton strategic plan, like I said, I was trained in this 25 years ago, and every time that little carousel outside the bookstore in the airport needs a pick-me-up, they come up with new terms, and they rotate the little spinner around, and you get new strategic planning terms, but they're all the same. The SWOT analysis, if you want to be transparent with that and say, well, you know, where are our real opportunities and threats, you're naming off, for example, competitors in the community, and you don't want that in a public plan. A lot of times, if we're not paying teachers enough, or if we're looking at our problems, we're looking at, it's not just a matter of paying teachers more, but it's paying the right teachers more. So sometimes you have particular types of teachers you're trying to work out of the system. Those sorts of things, those aren't things you put in public plan.
Okay. So I think the comment before about nothing's new under the sun and we should all be out there R&D, research, and duplicating. They want to know specifically, what are some best schools to pirate resources? And then they end by saying, arg. So any want to offer any specifics?
One thing I would offer is that when people ask you, what is a classical Christian education? I started monitoring myself. How quickly do we start talking about the trivium?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not in anybody else's vocabulary. Right? So this is a challenge. So I spent a day with Patch and Tom Spencer, and we came up with the five distinctives of classical Christian education. It's posted on the ACCS website. And you'll note in that description, it doesn't mention trivium anywhere. It talks about time-tested teaching methods and content, which means the same thing, but are words that people understand. So I would encourage you to look at that. That's one place, particularly from a messaging perspective. I think it's right on the homepage. There's 5 points. It's time-tested methods, academically rigorous, nurturing environment. What am I forgetting? Anyway, it's up on the webpage.
Let me just second this. If we use what I've called Gnostic language of our inside, our little minds, we either scare the families in our community half to death, or we look like a bunch of weirdos that look pretentious.
Mm-hmm.
And so being able to talk about the classical model without sounding pretentious, I think, is very important. And so look for schools that have adopted the core principles of the classical model, but they work very diligently to make it match the zip code that God put their campus in.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
So we preach that pretty heavily. When schools come to visit, we say, do not go back to Baltimore and try to recreate the Regents thing. That would be a violation of kingdom work. Take some principles and then spend some time shaping that to the zip code that God put you in your hometown.
Yeah, I would just add that on top of this messaging, and this is on the website as well, when people say, what is classical Christian education? The way I answer that is I say, well, we believe it's the best way to help every child reach their God-given potential. Because mm-hmm. that's benefit-oriented. It doesn't talk about methods. And then, well, how does it do that? Then you can talk about the five distinctives and why it's different. And each of these five was selected because they highlighted a strength of classical Christian education, or they ghosted a weakness of other methods that resonate with people as they consider classical and Christian education.
All right, so we got 2 minutes and 2 questions, so 1 minute each. This is a pretty broad question. How do you keep costs down, or is that even a goal? Yeah, I would say, David, you want
to spend what you have to, not what you don't.
We do tell teachers when they want to dream out something, let number 10 of the list be, do we have the money for it? we don't have unlimited money, but getting people to creatively think without a boundary of where the cash is helps them at least think outside of their normal categories. And then we pray as the Lord provides funding, then we can realize that.
So the final question is, again, just sort of in the same vein, how much is reasonable to spend on marketing, a marketing website in particular?
$20,000.
I'll go with that.
Okay, $20,000.
You can do it for a lot less if you have people who know what they're doing. I was throwing a retail figure out there. I mean, if you've got people inside your community, the big problem with working with parents or people inside your community, even if they're really good at what they do, their commitment to maintaining it isn't always there or won't be after a couple of years. And the thing about websites is they have to be current, and it's just not going to work if you can't maintain it.
We just redid our website at Petra. You can check it out. I wouldn't say it's spectacular, but we went to WordPress, which most of you are probably using. This allows our school secretary to do updates to the website, so we don't have to go to a third party each time. And it's really what most websites are being done in today anyway.
Yeah, that's a foregone conclusion. I would fully agree. That's the technology platform of choice right now.
All right. Well, we are at time. Let's thank our panelists. All right. Thank you for your participation.